Today we have Jonathan Newar of Captain Experiences. Jonathan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Chad. Good to be here.
All right. So why don't you tell us what Captain Experiences is? It's actually out of all of my friends' businesses, your name is one of the best names that I just like because it's not something standard businessy. And I love y'all's branding and logo and y'all's hats, which, you know, obviously you're wearing right now. My wife has hers, so she's got the swag. So yeah, tell us about Captain Experiences.
Yeah. So Captain Experiences is a platform for booking outdoor sports guides. So our mission is to unlock the outdoors across all outdoor sports and geographies. So yeah, to date, we've started with hunting and fishing. So you can go on the site, captainexperiences.com, shameless plug. You can search by location, group size, target species, price, read verified reviews, and book right there with quality vetted guides.
Okay. And so like, how big is the site? How many users are you doing? How long have you been around?
Yeah, so we launched the platform in March of 2020, which was a pretty tricky time. I'm sure we'll get into.
Yeah, we'll get
into that. But yeah, we've now partnered with 1,500 guides, and we've become the largest platform in the U.S. for booking fishing trips. So yeah, anywhere from Texas to Florida, you know, up to Seattle, Hawaii, Alaska, and then a few international destinations as well. But yeah, in terms of traffic, you know, about 200,000 monthly site visitors. And yeah, you know, steadily climbing. We're starting to hit right now in March, you know, our peak time of the season. Spring break really kicks that off. And then all the way through until the kids go back to school is a busy time for us.
And what I want to talk about later as we, you know, catch back up is just how you dealt with the cold start problem. You know, when you're dealing with a marketplace, you'd have, you know, two types of customers that you've got to figure out. So it's an interesting problem that we'll delve into. But so like, what kind of revenue are you doing right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't really like to share on
whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so we can gauge, you know, for the listeners, like the idea of like the size of the company roughly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say that we're booking, you know, thousands of trips a month, you know, tens of thousands a year. So yeah, you know, really, really exciting to see that growth. And, yeah, you know, this past year, it was a 5X year for us. This year, you know, hopefully, can do something close to that as well.
And so, how many people run Captain Experiences? And is it full-time employees? Is it contractors? A mix of both?
Yeah. So small but mighty team of eight FTEs right now. So myself, my co-founder, Addison, two engineers under him, Brian and Adam. Jake is our one-man band as our director of marketing. And then we have Adam and Ashley as our adventure success or customer success managers. And then David on the guide onboarding side.
So pretty tight little business. And I love talking to people like you because I think there's been a renaissance for small businesses recently. We've been talking about, you know, small giants or small lean companies in just public for a long time now, but nobody like really meant it. It almost was if you feel a pain, you just hire someone and you deal with it. Whereas now I think people are more likely to just kind of deal with the pain and make sure they're hiring the right person and making sure that person has like enough to do. Whereas like a big corporation just has a bunch of mindless zombies that are probably putting in 5 hours of real work a month and just collecting a paycheck. So, you know, I think everybody would like to see more businesses that just kind of have all around people that perform more services and are deeper engaged with the company and just like enjoy working for the company more. Do you find like, how do you hire when you kind of have to?
Yeah. I mean, we really, you know, yeah, try to wait until it is a burning issue. And then we try to address those issues, you know, with product or, you know, with, you know, interesting creative workflows. Yeah. I mean, like we have major growth aspirations, you know, we've raised venture at this stage, you know, we're really trying to scale the business. But we're always thinking about how can we do less with more, as, you know, any sound business, you know, owner should be trying to optimize for. So yeah, really thinking about for us as a two-sided marketplace, a lot of that comes down to, you know, network effects. So for example, you know, SEO has been our number one acquisition channel to date, and we really lean on our guides for a lot of that content to help, you know, propel us up the rankings as opposed to our team, you know, having to, you know, flex that muscle ourselves.
Yeah, 100%. And I like The other thing is just taking investment. You know, that is also a hot topic right now, because 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was just falling from the heavens. And then now there are companies that are just kind of underwater because they were expected to grow too much too fast. Yeah. And then they just weren't able to like grow into their valuation, and now they're upside down. And so,
yeah,
you know, investment kind of as a, not as a primary source, is like, you ultimately, you got to have your customers fund you or else you're not a real business. But you know, you definitely, there are definitely businesses that require investment of some sort. You know, my company Better Legal is one of them. Like, we would have not, it was a very much a pay to play business and still is. And we wouldn't have been able to do anything. We wouldn't have been able to bootstrap the company at all. So,
right.
Anyway, so what I want to do is now go back. You're interesting because you don't have, you know, when I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, there's always a lot of, I was like doing the side hustle when I was a kid. And I, you know, people have all these interesting creative, stories that, from like really early childhood, you did not follow that. which is, you know, everybody's got their own story and everybody has their own path towards entrepreneurship. So that's like perfectly fine. It's just, it's interesting that I think you're the first, not that I've interviewed thousands of people or anything like that, but you're one of the first that I've talked to that just has no real like early entrepreneurial experience. So yours, you just kind of had like a, you were just kind of a rambunctious child. So like, let's just talk a little bit about, I mean, when I asked you to write out some stuff about, you know, your past and stuff, you're like talking about wrapping houses and stuff like that. And not like, so it is kind of interesting. Tell us about your childhood a little bit to give us like set the scene.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, growing up, you know, a lot of, you know, that was focused on sports. You know, so really anything with a ball, any sort of team sport, you know, football, lacrosse, basketball, soccer, you know, whatever it was, we were always outside playing. And then we'd also, you know, just explore the woods, you know, behind the house and that sort of thing. And so, you know, in Houston, you know, our house backed onto the bayou there. And so we'd grow up fishing back there. And those were sort of like the first memories, and then going down to Galveston and things to fish on the salt. But yeah, I mean, that childhood, you know, I guess, you know, some founders, they sort of, you know, show that creativity, you know, through, you know, entrepreneurial endeavors, like, you know, car washes or things like that, lemonade stand. Yeah. But for us, it was more of just, you know, yeah, wrapping houses and getting into trouble and coming into creative ways. You know, we used to have this invisible rope trick where, you know, we'd act like we were tugging on different sides of a rope, you know, on a street, and all the cars would pause. It's just, you know, kind of funny stuff like that. And so, yeah.
When you wrote down the invisible rope trick, I didn't really know that what you were talking about, but now if nobody knows what he's talking about, if you're watching this and not listening to it, it's when like two kids just like pull, they both pretend like they're pulling on a rope and a car's driving by and the car slows down because they're worried that there is actually something there, but there is nothing there.
We were horrible like that.
my buddies and I used to pantomime at bars. We used to, pantomime double Dutch jump rope.
This oh, wow.
Like a, yeah. Like a bar trick. So we'd like invisible, we'd pretend we were like doing double Dutch, and then we'd invite people to jump into the double Dutch and pretend double
That's
Dutch.
Awesome.
And it got, yeah. I think I've outgrown it a little bit, but I keep trying to get it going at weddings. My wife won't participate, which is fine. But, anyway, so, what I do find interesting is that you were, you had specialty in it. And so I find entrepreneurs are either looking for something, they either have a creative entrepreneurial bug and they are pursuing something, or they have intimate experiences with something and then they turn that into an entrepreneurship pursuit. So tell me more about the fishing early on when you were a child. So I assume when you say fishing, you were also doing fishing and hunting, or were you just a fisherman?
Yeah, no. So actually just on the fishing side, you know, I never really grew up hunting, and that's what's been, you know, really exciting about Captain is that now that we've launched hunting, you know, our first additional vertical, it's been a real opportunity for me to get out there and learn and enjoy that pursuit. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what Captain is, you know, our mission is to unlock the outdoors. But yeah, I mean, growing up, you know, I never really thought of myself as an entrepreneur, even in school. You know, I was an economics and finance major, started my career, in finance in the oil and gas space. And then, yeah, the story is that oil and gas company sold, and I said, hey, let's book a fishing trip, and really just got hit with the idea. And from there, mapped things out and said, hey, there's a real opportunity for a business here. And, you know, mentors and advisors were saying, hey, you'd be stupid not to pursue this. And I said, hey, you know, I'm passionate about this. It's a real problem out there. We should, you know, endeavor to solve it. So yeah, it was never really like, hey, you know, what sort of business can I start, and jumping into it from, you know, a real sort of entrepreneurial background. It was more of just, hey, this needs to exist. Here we go.
Yeah. Okay. So let's put a pin in that real quick and go to college. So you were a bartender, or I guess a bouncer slash bartender in college. So explain those years to me and those jobs.
Yeah. So yeah, graduated from the University of Georgia in Athens, you know, great music town and nightlife scene. And so, yeah, you know, all throughout college, you know, it was kind of just a fun pastime, I guess, in a good way to earn some, you know, incremental income, you know, as a college student. And so, yeah, I was working in the bars with a number of friends, and yeah, it was always great. So started at the bottom rung, you know, as a door guy sitting on the stool for hours, you know, at length, you know, checking IDs. And at the end of the night, you know, 2-3 AM, you're cleaning up, you're mopping, wiping everything down, that sort of thing. But yeah, from there graduated to being a bar back, which was actually the best, role, because then you're out, you know, mingling with your friends and you're just cleaning glasses and stuff. And then from there you graduate to being a bartender. And so then, you know, yeah, you're serving drinks and, you know, managing tabs, and, you know, it's all about customer service and all that sort of thing. So really taught me a lot, you know, in terms of, you know, people, customer service, all of that.
How long, I've always kind of wondered this, because people generally don't start as a bartender. They start, you know, as right. a bar back and all that. How long does that experience last?
Let's see. So, yeah, I was, you know, working the door for, you know, a year or so, and then, you know, a year, or, you know, 6 months as a bar back. And then, yeah, you know, two and a half years as a bartender.
So how is like, do you move from a bouncer to a bar back and a bar back to a bartender because there's an opening, or because, that's just like the way, you know, the process happens, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's really about, you know, just sort of, you know, putting in the work and, you know, showing your commitment. You know, so there were people who, you know, I don't know, just sort of didn't demonstrate that sort of work ethic, you know, working the door, working as a bar back. And from there, you know, you just kind of, you know, just kind of stagnate there. But you know, if you're doing things the right way, yeah, you know, at some point you'll get that call up to the big leagues, I guess. And yeah, there's a starting position for you. And then, yeah, you would normally start at like the back of the bar at the, you know, sort of like the minor leagues, and you would, you know, serve drinks back there. And then, you know, if you, you know, prove that you can make it happen, then all of a sudden you'll get moved up into the front of the bar and that sort of thing.
So there's even a hierarchy for bar space. Like, the better bartenders get the prime spots.
Yeah, the prime real
estate. Maybe where you work, maybe not where everything is, but that seems logical to me.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And you know, I was even working for a guy in Athens, Jason, that owned a number of different bars. And so, you know, there are different bars that he owns, and you could get moved around from one bar to the next, things like that.
Okay, so this wasn't your only thing you were doing in college. You were also interning, right?
Yeah. So, interned, for a boutique investment bank, in Atlanta, called, yeah, Genesis Capital. Was interning there.
And so how did that, like, how long did that go for?
That was just a summer, you know, three months or so. But yeah, that was a fantastic experience, you know, getting to learn, all about, you know, middle market, businesses and, yeah, you know, what sort of value is there. So yeah, you know, a lot of modeling and, you know, Excel work, PowerPoint work, that sort of thing.
Okay. And what was your major in college?
So double majored in economics and finance.
And what was your plan? Like when you were in college at the time, like what was your, did you have a goal? Did you know what you wanted to do after college, or how did you, what was like the next step?
Yeah. I mean, I remember really wondering, I think, senior year of college, you know, that's really that big leap into the real world. And so, I was really thinking, hey, what do I want to do next? At the time, was really excited about investment banking and the ability to learn about all these different companies. From there, landed a role at SunTrust Robinson Humphrey, now Truist, in the oil and gas investment banking group in Houston. And yeah, I mean, I loved oil and gas. I was super, infatuated with the industry. I'm kind of like a maps person. I love, looking at maps and understanding the lay of the land, and in oil and gas, that's what it's all about. So you also have geology and chemistry and all of these different things wrapped into that industry, and then you obviously have the finance side of it, and looking at how to finance these businesses and grow, and it was just a really exciting experience.
Okay, so you graduated from college and then you went into investment banking. Did you work for the same company that you did an internship for, or some different?
No. Yeah. So this was a new company. And so they had a role open in Houston, but it was an Atlanta based bank. And so it really worked well, being from Houston, graduating from the University of Georgia. Joined the oil and gas group in Houston.
And how long did that go for?
So I was there for a little over a year.
Okay. And then, what did you do there? Like, give me a day to day. What was the most interesting thing you were doing there?
One of the most interesting things that I did is, just working on M&A deals. A lot of, activity was going on in the Permian Basin, which is one of the largest, oil reservoirs in the world. Working with companies to, acquire assets there or divest assets. It was just really exciting. I mean, a typical day, it was long hours, so you're working, 90, 100 hour weeks, get in it at 9, leave at 9 or 10 or so. And then if you had a deal, that really took over your life. It was just a lot of modeling, a lot of, PowerPoint, putting decks together, for the managing directors, for, the company's leadership, C-suite. A lot of research and heads down time.
Okay. So what I've gotten right now is that you kind of got customer service experience from the bartending and a lot of Excel experience from your oil and gas experience. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how either of those have influenced kind of what you're doing today? Like, can you think of things right away that, like, as you've been working on this business for the past few years, have there been instances where you were like, where you made that mental connection between, bartending or an experience, specific experience you had on either of those jobs?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've definitely, made the connection, on the finance side with the modeling experience and such. But honestly, until now, I hadn't really thought about, the bartending and how that customer service really translates. But I think it definitely does. And, what we've always said is, hey, as a founder who has started, a two-sided marketplace, a technology business, without a technology background, what I think is that every business at its core is a people business. And so that customer service is really the core of what you do. And I think back to one of our first, customer interactions, we had, an adventure, as we call them, Simon, who booked a trip with us. And the trip went awry. So he booked a night fishing trip and the trip said that all gear was included. Our guide shows up and he only has bait casting reels, which are a bit more advanced than spinning reels. So Simon couldn't really cast, didn't catch any fish, and he asked the guide to go home early. So after the trip, I follow up and I go, Simon, how was the trip? We want to make sure that it was a 10 out of 10 experience for you. And he says, oh, it was all right. We didn't really catch anything. I prod a little bit deeper and, he concedes that the trip was a bit of a letdown. And so we get into it and it's this real issue. And so I'm like, okay, well, let me figure this out for you. And so I call our guide and I say, hey, Captain, You know, Simon just, you know, said that all gear was included, but the trip was a letdown. What I'd like to do is, he's in Houston, you're in Galveston. It's, you know, an hour away. If you're up to it, next time you're out scouting the waters, take Simon out with you, give him that opportunity. Basically give him a free trip. You're going out anyway. He'll have that 10 out of 10 experience and end up leaving you a 5-star review. And you know, Captain Harry says, oh, you know, that sounds fine to me. Then I go back to Simon and I say, hey, we're not happy with the way that trip, you know, went down. We'd love to offer you a free trip. And he was over the moon. He said, oh, I really appreciate that. I love the guide. They get out there. Simon brings his daughter, leaves a 5-star review. And now Simon has gone on to book trips with us across Texas, Louisiana, Florida, Montana, Idaho, Alaska, helicopter trips, all of these different things. And he always points back to the fact that we made it right for him. And so I think, you know, that, you know, sort of thread line really goes back to, you know, bartending and just saying, hey, you didn't like that one. It was what you ordered, but it's all good. Here's a free drink on the house. Come back and see us, you know? So, I think that stuff really translates.
So this was his first experience with y'all, and then you kind of dug a little deeper, and then it translated into a longer term, you know, it sounds like a power user, really.
He definitely is. Yeah. And yeah, you know, we've had others, and Simon's gone on to refer others to us. And, yeah, it just goes to show, the power of making it right, especially in those early days when we were still figuring things out. You know, the platform's a lot more advanced at this stage, and we don't get too many of those, but you know, in any business you do, and it's on you to make it right.
Do you remember how many people or how many experiences you were doing at the time back then? Like, were these your really, really early days, or did you have some traction? Cause like one of the things I'm curious about is, why did you reach out to this individual? And is this something that you can continue to do? And do you do anything? Like, did that experience trigger you into saying, hey, for an early user, we really need to invite them to engage with us? Talk a little about that.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, you know, we were probably booking 10 trips a month or something like that. You know, it was really just getting off the ground. Simon was one of our very first users. We met at, you know, the Houston Fishing Show in person. And so, you know, now having scaled to thousands of trips a month, you know, we, you know, sadly just don't have the opportunity to meet every single one of our adventurers and speak with them. But what we do is we've built around that. And so we have our review system, and those reviews, not only do they get populated on the site, but they get sent into a Slack channel that our team, you know, audits and views in real time. And so we're in the office high-fiving each other, and we get a 10 out of 10, you know, review, and people uploading pictures of them, you know, with the big grip and grin, holding a big fish. And we're super excited about that. But then every once in a while, you know, once again, as any business does, you know, you get those 1-star reviews or the 2 stars. And at that point, we make it right. And we get with the guide and we figure out what we have to do, just like we did, you know, day one with Simon.
Did that early experience with the guide basically not having the right equipment, even though he said he did, was that a listing that he put himself and that just wasn't verified, because you can't verify everything, right? Like you can do what you can do, but once you scale to a certain size, it becomes untenable. But did that create any new processes for verification, or did you learn from that experience and implement anything specifically?
Yeah, definitely. So now we get, you know, in the weeds with our guides, and we're very explicit in, you know, what we call out on the trips. And so at the time, you know, we just had a specific sort of checkbox, you know, is all gear included? Yes, no. Now we have full, you know, at length sections about the trip, and we write in detail exactly, you know, what that trip constitutes. And so, yeah, you know, we haven't had you know, any or many issues to my knowledge, you know, of the same sort, because we've, you know, built against that.
And so what happens if a captain breaks that? Let's say they put that everything's in there. How do you identify that, you know, the review itself, 5 out of 10, 10 out of 10, is there anything that you ask the people on the trip specifically that kind of informs you that maybe, you know, it was filled out incorrectly?
Well, what we do is we have a pretty, you know, in-depth ranking system for our guides. And so we rank them on a number of criteria. And all of those criteria are, you know, predicated on the adventure experience. You know, so is the guide earning 5-star reviews consistently? Is the guide updating their calendar and not declining trips, you know, regularly? You know, is all of the are all of the information fields on each trip listing filled out in depth in terms of, you know, quality photos on the trip listing, you know, specifics about the gear and tackle and all of that. And so if all of those things are fulfilled, that guide is going to rise to the top of the Captain Experiences platform and thereby earn more trips and earn more 5-star reviews and, you know, protect and ensure that adventure experience. If there's a guide that is, you know, falling short on one of those two things or one of those few things, then they get a notification in the platform saying, hey, you could be earning more trips if you included more high quality photos or if you filled out this piece on the specifics of your trip. And so from there, it becomes, you know, sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy that the adventure experience with Captain is going to be very solid.
Okay, so this brings me to kind of what your business model is. So, you know, similar to Airbnb or Uber, you don't run any of these experiences yourself. So what is your business model? Do you get a percentage of the booking? Is it a flat fee per booking? You know, give me some idea of, you know, how you make money.
Yeah. So we are, a standard marketplace model, consumer marketplace. We earn a commission on every executed trip. The pitch to guides is, hey, we'll create your profiles and trip listings for you. You set your own deposit cancellation policies and prices. So you're free to run your business however you'd like. We're marketing your trips 24/7. Meanwhile, we only get paid when we bring you an executed trip. And so from there, you know, the guides say, hey, that's fantastic. Sign me up. Let's do it.
And so let's talk about the actual cold start problem, which is the marketplace. So, you know, if people are not familiar with the cold start problem, it is basically a two-sided marketplace problem. And that is that, you can't have in Jonathan's case, you can't have trips without the captains, and you can't get a lot of captains without the people who buy the trips or the experiences. And so you've got, you know, chicken and egg, right? So how did you start? What was the, I assume it might've been in stages. I'm going to make a kind of a guess and you tell me where I got right and where I got wrong. So, you mentioned that SEO was kind of your number one, channel. So I'm going to guess that it was first and foremost, just building out an SEO kind of like getting a almost programmatic SEO where you gather a bunch of data and then you kind of auto-generate hundreds of pages. You kind of identify which pages are ranking and getting traffic. And then you might reach out to people individually and say, hey, we're getting a lot of traffic in this. If you want to sign up for our marketplace, you get 80% of the commission and we'll just send you free leads. We'll help you book. We'll manage all this stuff. What I get right and what I get wrong, and maybe you can kind of fill in some gaps.
Yeah. I mean, I would say to solve the cold start problem, I would say that you nailed step two. But step one, what for us was to focus on supply. And so that's really how we hacked it, you know, early on. And so we went to these guides and we, you know, learned from them, and I walked the docks in person talking to these guides, and they would say, yeah, you know, it's a pain to manage our calendar. You know, I wish that there was a way for me to get more bookings without having to, you know, pay a website guy who's probably ripping me off and then, you know, having to run, you know, ads or, you know, post on social media all the time, which I don't want to do after running two trips a day and washing my boat and re-rigging all my tackle. And so from there, we said, okay, well, we can take care of all of that for you and bring you more trips. What we need from you is to list with us, you know, in the hope and the expectation that one day being not being tomorrow or even the next day, but one day we're going to be able to build this marketplace and consistently bring you trips. And then to lower the lift there, we said, hey, we'll create your profiles and trip listings, everything that I you know, just said, we'll do all of the heavy lifting for you. And so from there, we were able to onboard guides and bring them onto the platform. And then that's when we, you know, stepped up the demand side with, you know, SEO and events and things like that. Because, yeah, I mean, the knock on SEO is that, you know, it takes a while to really rev up. But once you do, it's fantastic. It's organic, and you can really scale it. But in those early days, we had to fill the gaps with events and just sort of, you know, legging it, so to speak. But, you know, we've since evolved that to where, you know, the guides manage their listings now, and we've made it very easy for them to onboard themselves. And we've done a great job as a platform, to the point where our existing guides now refer other guides, to the platform. Mm-hmm. So, right now over 50% of our guides, that are new signups are what we call zero touch. So they're, wow, they're hearing about us, from other means.
That's awesome. And so do you have an affiliate program, or is it just like do captains get like a bonus if they invite other captains, or is it just because it's a good service and they're and they like it?
Yeah, not right now. I mean, we're not subsidizing it. It's truly just word of mouth. And so, I mean, these guide networks are so dense, you know, you know, think about the Galveston Yacht Basin, for example, in Galveston. I mean, there's probably 400 slips and there's probably, you know, 50 charter guides right there that operate all out of the same exact address. And so if there's a guide that's leaving every day with trips, you know, his buddy at the slip next to him is going to say, hey, what's your secret? And that guide is going to say, hey, you know, you've got a list with Captain Experiences. They're bringing me more trips than I can handle.
Got it. So it's a density thing. They're all in the same place. And so people are physically seeing that they've got a lot of trips and they, in the person seeing this does not. Yep. So you said early on, you were just kind of walking the dock. So, with the supply, solving the supply problem, I imagine that you had to start in one place. Like you couldn't have launched five cities at once.
Exactly. Yeah. So we really, you know, studied marketplaces, and there's so much out there that you can really, you know, teach yourself, you know, so yeah, cold start problem, Andrew Chen, Lenny Rachitsky's blogs, you know, there's just so much out there. And so, yeah, we really studied these successful marketplaces and said the difference between success and failure comes down to liquidity. So, you know, being able to connect supply and demand. And so we said, hey, we need to build liquidity. And in order to do that, we had to focus and constrain ourselves, not only geographically, but also vertically. And so rather than launching, you know, in Colorado and saying, hey, we have a mountain biking guide in Telluride and a kayaking guide in Vail. But if you want to go, you know, mountain biking in Telluride, you fall through the cracks, or sorry, you know, in Vail, you fall through the cracks. And so we said, hey, no one's going to fall through the cracks. What do we need to do to execute on that? And so we launched fishing only in Galveston, Texas. We said from day one, if you're searching for a fly fishing trip for redfish, we're going to have you covered. If you're searching for an overnight tuna trip for $5,000 or whatever, we're going to have multiple options for you and everything in between. And from there, we were able to build liquidity in Galveston. Once we monitored that and we said, hey, this is a healthy market, we then copy pasted across the Texas coast, then across the Gulf of Mexico, brought Florida on in a big way up to Cape Cod, over to the Great Lakes. And now, yeah, we're coast to coast across the US.
Okay. So you did Galveston, and then it was Texas coast, and then it was Florida coast, Gulf of Mexico, which, may or may not include, you know, the Caribbean islands and whatnot. What is kind of the next obvious target after that? Like, what was your stair step into coast to coast?
I mean, it was really just identifying markets, one where we were falling behind on liquidity. And so we monitor that via a suite of metrics, and we say, hey, we need more guides in Miami, Florida. But it gets a bit more nuanced than that. You know, as I was talking about with fly fishing for redfish versus tuna fishing, you know, both of those activities and everything in between takes place in Galveston. So you can't just monitor liquidity by saying, hey, Galveston is healthy. You need to look at these, you know, specific types of trips. And that's been a unique hurdle for us throughout. You know, you think of, you know, a CPG company or some of these others where they have specific SKUs. We don't have SKUs. We have over 5,000 trips on the site, and every single one of them is different. And so what we need to do is, you know, we need to look at Miami and then double click and say, okay, well, it looks like people are having trouble in South Beach finding a trip. And then it looks like people in South Beach are looking for offshore. And so we need more offshore fishing guides in South Beach. And so from there, we onboard the market, you know, that, that tiny little market balances, and then we can go on to the next one. And so that's how we have looked at, you know, scaling the business across the US, in terms of monitoring existing markets. But then we go out and identify the markets with the biggest potential and we onboard them, you know, from the cold start.
Is that informed by SEO or something else? Like, do you have pages for fishing trips that don't exist yet?
Yes. Yeah, we do have some, but yeah, a lot of it is informed, you know, through SEO and actually, you know, that really goes to your point, you know, on the, finance experience translating to captain. You know, really what I thought about in terms of market growth was thinking about it from, the perspective of a drilling schedule. And so when you're building out a drilling schedule in oil and gas, you think, hey, we're going to drill the most economic wells first. And so, you know, we think about that from a market perspective and think, hey, does it make sense to launch in, you know, Charleston, South Carolina, or does it make sense to launch in Chattanooga, Tennessee? And we figure that out. And then we prioritize those markets on our drilling schedule in terms of market expansion.
Is there more that influences it more than SEO, or is it SEO is kind of a trigger where you get to create a top 20 list of next spots, and then you kind of look into the local market? Like, what are the other signals that you get?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to find quantitative signals, you know, in the fishing space. You know, it's not like construction or something else where there's, you know, a number of annual reports, you know, out there. And so, yeah, you know, what we've found to be helpful to us is, you know, SEO, because Google does, you know, have information on these keyword searches. But then given the fact that we're passionate about fishing in the outdoors ourselves, we can sort of qualitatively say, hey, you know, like a lot of people go fly fishing in Montana or something, you know, like even if there's not much search volume for each specific market in Montana, we know that fly fishing in Montana is a big deal. So, you know, let's move that up the list.
Okay. And so with the SEO again, not to just completely focus on SEO the whole time, but when you were in Galveston and you kind of had Galveston on lock, were you working on the SEO then, or was it after you had the Gulf of Mexico, Texas coast, or when did you actually start saying, we need a way to, you know, create a whole bunch of traffic for a whole bunch of different, things, pages that we can grow into?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we focused on SEO when we were just constricting the marketplace to Galveston. And that was really just out of necessity. You know, we didn't have, you know, all that much capital at the time. And we said, hey, how are we going to get scrappy? You know, we can focus on SEO. It's organic as long as you put in the work. And, you know, in terms of the site structure and content, you can make it happen. And so we really focused on, you know, writing all of this content about Galveston from our experiences fishing there, you know, in terms of the different fishing spots that you can go to, the different types of trips and all of that sort of thing. And from there, our Galveston page started ranking. And then from there, as we scaled, we said, hey, you know, we really can't, you know, focus that much time. You know, we need to build a scalable sort of growth motion. And from there, that's where a lot of the programmatic stuff came into play. But then we also always go back around with our personal knowledge and with the knowledge of our guides to, yeah, build content around each of those markets.
And just for people that might not know, I've done programmatic SEO myself, and it has been amazing. Can you, from your perspective, explain to everybody what programmatic SEO is and the benefit?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just like trying to templatize your SEO growth. And so, like, one of the things for us is, you know, what's called a static site slinger. And so basically, we have this process where if we bring on a guide in a new market, from there, you know, once that guide is taken live and their trips are taken live, a landing page is automatically created for that market, you know, with all of the content. And so we have, you know, content templates where we can say, hey, you know, what are the important things to note, you know, on this page? Well, it's the target species that you can catch, the best times of the year to catch those fish, What are the, you know, favorite tactics used by guides and all of that sort of stuff. And so from there, with these templates and the static site slinger, a lot of the work is done for you, just by creating that guide and their listings and, the associated content.
And so the captain kind of assists you in creating this. So they create their listing, and then that allows you not only create their listing, but a list, you know, multiple pages for the area. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing that we thought too, with this programmatic play is, you know, why would anyone take our word for it? You know, people are booking through Captain to book with our damn good guides, as we like to say. So let's, you know, voice, you know, their opinions and their experience that they've gained, you know, over years and years of fishing those waters. And so, yeah, you know, that's, we just try to, you know, get out of the way and be the microphone, and our guides are the voice.
And so do ratings then get put onto not only the guides page, but of the page of maybe the area?
Yep. Yeah. Our verified reviews, you know, from trips that are booked through the site, from adventurers that we know went out with that guide on that day, are then, yeah, you know, incorporated into those landing pages.
Have you thought about using AI in order to kind of like pour gasoline on this?
Yeah. So we do leverage, you know, some AI tools, you know, for those templates and such. And then, yeah, we always go back through and spot check and, you know, add the personal touch.
Okay. And, just out of curiosity, how has the SEO grown? Like, how many pages are you creating a month or a year? If you even know?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah, I couldn't tell you, but, you know, I know that our SEO growth has been fantastic. You know, if you look in, you know, our favorite tool for the team is Ahrefs, obviously Google's mm-hmm. Google Search Console as well. That's a Google tool. You know, you want to go straight to the source. But yeah, I mean, it's been moving up and to the right. And the other thing worth noting is that, we do run, you know, a seasonal business in that every single, you know, vertical, you know, in its standalone, you know, is seasonal, you know, so for fishing, the busiest times of the year from March through August. Well, for hunting, you know, it's the inverse. And, you know, that's sort of a growth hack for us because the same guide can offer hunting and fishing trips. But for the first time this year, we've seen our SEO growth continue to, you know, expand throughout the fishing sort of slow season, which is really exciting for us.
Do you also run ads, or do you focus on the organic?
We do run ads. We run Google and Bing ads. Yeah. Just to, you know, claim more real estate. And then, it also helps with what I was saying in terms of, how SEO can take a bit of time, you know, to really get up and running. And so in that interim, we can, you know, get a market to liquidity faster, using paid.
And so you've taken investment. You mentioned that. At what point did you actually do that? Did you do that prior to kind of walking the docks with the original captains and learning about the process? Was this you had an idea, you pitched the idea, you got money, and then you started the business? Or was it you maybe thought that there was something there, and so you kind of got some traction, and then you pitched the traction with the idea and the potential growth to investors?
Yeah. So we really did the crawl, walk, run sort of approach to fundraising. And so in the early days, you know, I invested myself in the business to really just get it off the ground, build the initial website and go through the initial launch. And then from there, we were able to book, you know, a handful of trips a month or so. And we were able to, you know, raise a decent angel round. And from there, that allowed us to grow the business, build some initial traction, at which point, you know, venture investors became interested, and it unlocked, you know, that, you know, fundraising, you know, opportunity for us. And then, yeah, you know, raise another subsequent round, and, yeah, we'll see what happens in the future. But, yeah, it's definitely been, you know, a stair-stepped approach.
So Amazon started in books. A lot of people don't realize that Amazon sold books for years,
right?
Only books for years before ever going into their second market, which was CDs and DVDs. And then after that, and these were because, like, you know, a book is, you know, this big, it's easy to ship, it doesn't get damaged. Right. That's what they pursued. Same with DVDs and CDs. It was, you know, if they packaged it properly in the right kind of a package, they could, you know, not have a lot of damage and whatnot. And that's what they did prior to moving into, I think toys was kind of their third major, major thing. But a lot of people don't realize like that it was literal years of selling books before they moved into their second category. How long were you doing fishing before hunting became the second category, and what influenced that? Was it because of the inverse seasonality, or was it something else that informed that?
Yeah. I mean, we focused on fishing. I mean, for 3 or 4 years or so, before expanding. And, I think, it's really about, focusing on the user experience on both sides of the marketplace and making sure that it's, you know, a true 10 out of 10. And so, yeah, you know, something like books, you'd be amazed that it took Amazon so many years to really perfect that. But, you know, once they perfected that perfect 10 out of 10 experience, they could then go and do it, you know, across CDs and toys and all of these other verticals that they're now in. And so, yeah, for us, it's the exact same perspective. But in terms of what, you know, informed the decision to expand into a new vertical, it was a few things. But yeah, it was seasonality. The fact that if you overlay the hunting and fishing seasonality trends in aggregate, it's a completely flat trend line across the year. So that was really exciting for us. But then it's also the fact that there's an overlapping guide base for those two markets. So the same fishing guide that's offering fishing trips with us can offer hunting trips in, you know, the fall and winter. And so from there it was, hey, let's just kind of, you know, tweak the site a little bit. And then boom, you know, rods and reels become, you know, shotguns and shells, and a boat becomes a duck blind, and boom, you've got hunting. And you just have the exact same supply side relationship, and you've unlocked a new vertical. And then, yeah, the third piece is just the fact that we have our existing adventure base, and we've grown that to, you know, a substantial, you know, early base. And from there, we can reach out to our existing demand side base and say, hey, you love us for fishing and for the experience. Well, here's, you know, hunting. It's the exact same thing. And now you can book that through Captain. And so that's really the beauty of a marketplace. You know, you're not selling, you know, the same mattress and then you churn through the mattress market or, you know, whatever it may be. You can continue to scale your supply and offer that new supply to your existing demand.
So, but what was the thing that triggered it? Like, was it the seasonality was slow and you're like, man, we got to make money in this off season? And then someone else was like, you know, maybe you're talking to a captain. They're like, oh, you know, we do hunting trips when we're not doing, you know, what was the actual process? How did that work?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, early on we thought of it as a possibility. And so, you know, we reached out.
Okay. So you were already kind of thinking about expansion.
Definitely. Well, I mean, it's funny because when launching Captain, you know, our vision since day one has been to unlock the outdoors across all outdoor sports and geographies. And so my projections were, you know, month one, we're going to be fishing in Galveston. Month two, we're going to be fishing in Texas. Month three, we're going to be fishing across the Gulf Coast. And month four, you know, worldwide fishing is a thing. And month five, you know, we're going to be in hunting, rock climbing, rafting, kayaking, mountain biking. Obviously.
But instead it was year, not month.
Exactly. Exactly. Replace month with year, and then you're somewhat close. And so, yeah, you know, we had to kind of pare back those expectations a bit when you really get into the nitty gritty and the execution of it all. But we always knew that, you know, these guides, they have overlapping sports, you know, so in the Southeast, you know, it's hunting and fishing. But then when you get up into, you know, the mountains, for example, you know, you could have a guide that's a fly fishing guide and a mountain biking guide and a backcountry skiing guide in the winter. And so just by partnering with that one individual, you unlock three verticals. So that's always been the plan. It's just been sort of figuring out when the right time is to take that leap.
Yeah, I think Better Legal is now 7 years old, and we are now this year doing some things that I had conceived of in, you know, the first maybe 2 or 3 months. And I don't think people like, it really is a grind that you have to commit to for a long time, because it just takes so long to really see progress, but it does become a flywheel. Mm-hmm. Like, do you kind of agree with that? Where it's like, the grind at the beginning is just like so slow, and it almost seems like there's no end to it. And then it starts, there's no silver bullet, but it's almost like a bunch of things that do a little bit of, a little bit of good kind of packaged together into it, just like slowly starting to get faster and faster. Do you kind of identify with that?
Definitely. 100%. And I think it's really tough as a founder, you know, because, you know, everyone talks about how your business is, you know, akin to, you know, your child, your baby. But each of these individual features and ideas that you want, or verticals, you know, are also, you know, like, you know, it feels like you have real attachment to them. And so it's really hard to sacrifice those and put them off into 7 years from now. But you have to make that choice to say, hey, this is what's best for the execution of the company and where we are today. And, you know, we'll get there and we'll be reconnected with this idea at some point down the line. It's tough, but it comes with the territory.
So if you conceived of all these different verticals that you might be in at the beginning, just out of personal curiosity, because I'm so interested in branding, were there other names other than Captain Experiences? Because Captain Experiences is perfect for fishing. Hunting is a little, you know, whatever, but then, you know, once you get into rock climbing or if you do any other stuff like that, then it, you know, Captain is kind of not a perfect term. Like, did you have other names? Did that bother you at all? Or is like Captain going to evolve into just like the leader of the adventure? And, you know, just like when you launched Hunting, did you see any kind of confusion with people about that?
Yeah, we honestly didn't see any sort of confusion. And yeah, again, you know, we thought about this, you know, from the earliest of days, and we thought, hey, you know, captain, obviously captain of a boat, it applies to fishing. But when you think beyond fishing, you know, captain sort of has a team mentality. You have the captain of a football team or a soccer team or whatever it may be. You know, you have Captain America and this sort of hero image of it all. And yeah, you can really think of it as, you know, someone, you know, booking a backcountry, you know, hiking trip, summiting the top of a mountain, you know, and captain really applying to that sort of experience. So yeah, I mean, we think that with the right sort of messaging and packaging and all of that, captain can transcend captain of a boat pretty seamlessly.
Yeah. So how long ago when did you officially launch? And then how long ago did you launch Hunting?
So we launched Captain Experiences in March of 2020.
Really, right. You mentioned that, right? COVID, baby.
Yep, exactly. Right? Exactly. And then, yeah, we launched Hunting in earnest this past fall. But we had run a test experiment with, you know, duck hunting in Texas the previous fall.
Are there other verticals that you are already planning towards, or are you gonna focus on hunting for a while?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. It's all about how quickly we can expand. But what we saw with hunting is that, you know, really that expansion was not that heavy of a lift. It was not as heavy of a lift as we anticipated as a team. You know, it was really just kind of like tweaking some things, and we had the rails in place to really make it happen. So, you know, I think with hunting just being launched in Texas and Florida to date, again, to constrain the marketplace and build that liquidity, I think that we have a lot of work over the next couple of years to really scale that geographically how we want. But yeah, you know, we want to get into those other verticals as quickly as we can.
And so, give me a list, you know, just off the top of your head, what are the obvious next things?
Yeah, I mean, I think scaling hunting and fishing across the U.S. and then from there, the next overlapping sports with that guide base become the mountain sports. So mountain biking, rock climbing, backpacking, you know, backcountry skiing, snowshoeing, snowmobiling, things of that nature. And then also, you know, on the saltwater side of things, you know, we already do some of this, but going deeper into, you know, diving as we did in Miami, you know, for lobsters and, you know, getting into scuba and things like that, all sorts of sports.
Do you see this being a global
business? Definitely. No doubt about it.
Okay. When does that happen? Or are you already doing it? I mean, I assume Mexico is probably something that might already be, you know, happening, but when do you expand like to true global?
Yeah. So we have some trips, you know, in Mexico and the Caribbean right now. And those are, you know, seamless. They're fantastic. We've got great guides in those locales. But yeah, I mean, we're itching to go global. I mean, you know, I did my honeymoon in Australia on the Great Barrier Reef, and that was amazing, but, you know, it was a pain. You know, it was like going back to when I was tried to book that first trip in Galveston. It was a mess, and it didn't end up going the way that we wanted. So yeah, I mean, we want to get global as quickly as we can. It's just a question of, resources, prioritization, liquidity, doing things right versus trying to scale and having things slip through the cracks.
All right. Well, Jonathan, thank you for sharing all this with us. The website is captainexperiences.com. Do you have anything else you want to share or, socials that you've got that people can reach out to you on?
No, yeah, it's just Captain Experiences across the board. But yeah, Chad, this was a blast. Can't thank you enough.
All right. Thank you so much.